The headlines: Iran lodges an official protest over the U.S. seizure of its oil near Greece, saying it's deeply concerned about Washington's continued violation of international laws. Russia and China veto a U.S. push at the U.N. Security Council to toughen sanctions against North Korea over its missile launches. And U.S. police account of the recent deadly shooting in a school in the state of Texas comes under scrutiny amid growing anger over the tragedy. Hello and welcome, everybody. Iran has summoned the Chargé d'Affaires of Switzerland that represents U.S. interests in Tehran to protest the seizure of an Iranian flagship in Greek waters. The Iranian Foreign Ministry expressed strong protest at the U.S.'s clear violation of international regulations on free navigation. The ministry urged the immediate lifting of the confiscation of the ship and its cargo on Wednesday. It also summoned the Greek Chargé d'Affaires in Tehran to protest the confiscation of the vessel. Greece impounded the Russian-operated vessel this week following U.S. request. Iran says the ship was carrying oil and sought refuge along Greece's coast after experiencing technical problems and bad weather conditions. Iran says the U.S. has unloaded the cargo and that amounts to international piracy. Historian and political analyst Markus Papadopoulos says Washington uses Greece as a tool to deepen its influence in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea.
Greece is used as a tool by Washington to not only enhance America's position in the Eastern Mediterranean and also in North Africa, but also to try and interfere in Russian foreign policy objectives in the Eastern Mediterranean, Syrian foreign policy objectives in the Eastern Mediterranean, and also Iranian foreign policy objectives in the Eastern Mediterranean. And it comes as no surprise to me whatsoever that the Greek government, which is only independent in theory, has acted on the instructions of Washington by detaining this Iranian vessel. Why? It is a way of the Americans attempting to interfere with Iranian trade as a way of trying to weaken the Iranian economy. Greece, as I said, is fundamental to America's position in the Eastern Mediterranean.
The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council says some countries in the region and beyond are sending Takfiri terrorists to Afghanistan. Ali Shamkhani said terrorism and radicalism are among main causes of insecurity in Afghanistan. He pointed the finger at the United States, saying Washington and its expansionist policies are at fault for the 20-year war in Afghanistan. Shamkhani said the U.S. must release Afghanistan's frozen funds and make up for the financial damage it has inflicted on the country. The top Iranian security official was speaking in Tajikistan's capital, Dushanbe. At a regional summit on Afghanistan, Shamkhani said his country has always backed the security and stability of its neighbor. He said Iran is hosting around 5 million Afghans without effective international aid. The fate of the 2015 Iran deal remains far from clear as talks between Tehran and the P4+1 group are stalled. As we'll see in this next report, Iran says the main remaining issue in the talks is about its right to economic and trade benefits under the JCPOA.
Talks to revive the 2015 Iran deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, remain stalled after a year of intensive diplomacy. Senior diplomats from Iran and the P4+1 group, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, have held many rounds of talks in the Austrian capital, Vienna. The diplomatic initiative to restore the deal has become a long and complex saga. Whether negotiators will finally cross the finishing line is anyone's guess. All parties have acknowledged that there are a few remaining gaps that need to be bridged between Washington and Tehran before the deal emerges. But what's keeping the talks from further progress? It has been repeatedly said that Washington's refusal to remove Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps from its terrorism blacklist is the most important sticking point. But Iran's top diplomat has given a vastly different account of what is blocking the path of the negotiations. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian told the World Economic Forum on Thursday that the issue of the IRGC being on the U.S. blacklist of terrorist groups is a minor issue that has been exaggerated and magnified by the Israeli lobby, and that Iran's top priority is the interests of the nation. He also warned that American interests and foreign policy have been taken hostage by the Israeli regime. Israel has made no secret of its opposition to the 2015 deal and diplomacy with Iran. It has been engaged in a not-so-covert campaign to derail the Vienna negotiations.
Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian stresses that what has caused a pause in the negotiations is Iran's economic and trade demands. And the most important remaining issue is the effective removal of economic sanctions. The top diplomat says the maximum pressure campaign launched by former U.S. President Donald Trump must end. He says the window of diplomacy is still open, adding that Americans know what they need to do.
U.S. President Joe Biden was a vociferous critic of Trump's unilateral withdrawal from the JCPOA in May 2018. During his presidential campaign, he pledged to work to rejoin the agreement. But has he done so? Iran's top diplomat says that has not been the case so far. Amir Abdullahian told the World Economic Forum that Biden's policy towards Iran has not been different from Trump's hostile approach. The Iranian foreign minister said the U.S. president must decide now whether he wants to waste time or courageously return to complying with U.S. commitments under the 2015 deal. His comments come after U.S. Special Envoy for Iran, Robert Malley, said the prospects of a return to the Iran nuclear deal are tenuous at best. Malley made the remarks on the same day that the Biden administration unveiled new sanctions on Iran. The U.S. Special Envoy for Iran noted, however, that Washington still believes it is in the national security interests of the United States to try to salvage the 2015 agreement. The future of the hard-earned international deal remains unclear and could unravel completely if Washington fails to return to its commitments. Meanwhile, Israel is doing its utmost to prevent any deal between Washington and Iran, just as it did before the JCPOA came into existence in 2015.
No group and no block of people has more power and influence in the United States than Jewish leaders in shaping how Americans think and American attitudes. And that's not only true, but it's especially true with regard to Iran. The American media is overwhelmingly very hostile to Iran. And this is in keeping with what Jewish leaders and all those who support Israel really want.
Will the administration of Joe Biden be able to withstand pressure exerted by the Israeli lobby and act based on America's national interests?
The United States on Thursday drafted a resolution at the UN Security Council calling for more sanctions against North Korea over its missile program. The U.S. push, however, failed after China and Russia vetoed the resolution. Both countries argued that further punitive measures will not resolve tensions. We've discussed that issue in depth during our news review program. Let's take a listen.
Hello and welcome to the news review. In this edition, the United States has failed to push a tougher UN sanctions system on North Korea after Russia and China vetoed the vote on measures.
We have often stated that the introduction of new sanctions against the DPRK is a path to a dead end. We have stressed the ineffectiveness and the inhumanity of further strengthening the sanctions pressure on Pyongyang starting in 2006, since many restrictive resolutions were adopted against Pyongyang.
The situation on the peninsula has developed to what it is today, thanks primarily to the flip-flop of U.S. policies and failure to uphold the results of previous dialogues.
The Chinese envoy added that sanctions will have humanitarian consequences for North Korea. The U.S. drafted the resolution called for a cut in oil imports by North Korea over its recent firing of an intercontinental ballistic missile. Pyongyang has already faced several rounds of U.N. sanctions over its missile and nuclear program over the past years. North Korea says its program is aimed at self-defense in the face of regional threats led by the U.S. North Korea also says that the U.S. has failed to fulfill its promise to lift sanctions after their leaders held summits in 2018 and 19 to resolve the dispute. To discuss that further, we're joined by Kim Juo Shu, a senior fellow at the Hangul Institute and political analyst live from Beijing. We also have with us Andrew Leong, independent China specialist, who's joining us live from Hong Kong. Let's begin with our guest from Beijing, Mr. Xu. If you could please tell us more about this sanctions policy that the U.S. is pursuing and, of course, implying it against any country that it deems to be an enemy and wants to restrict its actions. But these sanctions are basically hurting ordinary people, aren't they?
Well, that's true. Every time, you know, when there were sanctions being mapped out, it's said, you know, it would say it's targeting this country. That's a very abstract term. It's the people who will suffer the consequence over the sanctions. Remember the U.S. sanctions, there are two types of sanctions. You know, one is from the U.N. over the past 15, 16 years. Basically, China, Russia, U.S., they cooperate with each other. They did impose some sanctions on North Korea for its nuclear development. But at the same time, the U.S. has its unilateral sanctions on North Korea. But I think, you know, for China and Russia, in particular China, for the recent years has been asking the U.S. said basically that you should reduce some of the sanctions, lift some of the sanctions, and then to encourage North Korea to start, change its policy and start negotiation with the U.S. side.
Okay, so before we continue this discussion, let's take a look at some social media reactions to the story. Okay, so here we have Yesini, who says the United Nations belongs to everyone, not to the private property of the United States. Thomas Liu says the Koreans have been invaded by the Japanese for hundreds of years. Time they stood up and make their own. It is quite time that they make their own decisions, not by the Japanese or the U.S. Ricardo Alfredo says the U.N. could sanction the U.S. because they are the main troublemakers in the world. Mutzka says China and Russia did the right thing. U.S. wants wars on other countries so they can benefit from them. U.S. built its wealth and power through World War I and World War II and a whole bunch of other wars it instigated. And also Matthias Mornfolu says North Korea has no dealings with the U.S. and its allies. All their unilateral sanctions have no effect. And Mr. Leong, this is a final question I'm asking you. We have less than 2 minutes left, so if you could please wrap this up quickly. We also had another comment about the U.S. benefiting from wars, World War I, World War II, and many other wars, and that military-industrial complex in action. Tell us more about that and why the U.S. basically has shown and proven in action that it is not genuinely pursuing peace on the Korean Peninsula.
Well, in fact, what the United States worry about is not so much security that the North Korea would invade the United States. The concern is more the threat to its hegemony, that we're seeing that its hegemony power in Asia Pacific is now being challenged by China, and even North Korea is defying its dominance. So that's the worry. It's not worry about the North Korea would likely invade the United States. And of course, that the military industrial complex is also is playing a role in the sense that the complex wants to create war so that they can make more money. And of course, that the war in Ukraine is benefiting the American military hugely with all these weapons and supplying Ukraine and other countries. But I think that at the end of the day, the United States is seeing the next 10 years as the most crucial part in maintaining its hegemony, because China is rising rapidly, both economically and militarily. And then even in the South China Sea, China is now able to defy American dominance in many ways. And even in Europe, the European countries, even though they are rallying behind the United States to contain Russia, but both the leading countries like Germany and France would like to adopt a more nuanced and independent policy. So the United States is really quite desperate to maintain its hegemony. And then the situation in North Korea is only one of the points of this chessboard, which is now shifting quite rapidly.
Well, thank you very much. Andrew Leong, independent China specialist out of Hong Kong, and Mr. Akindo Xu, senior fellow at the Pangol Institute and a political analyst, joining us live from Beijing. Thanks to both of you gentlemen for sharing your thoughts and views with us. And thanks to all of you for following this edition of the News Review.
Russian forces have come closer to surrounding Ukrainian troops in two eastern cities as they try to expand their control over the Donbas region. The Russians have been attacking from three sides to encircle the Ukrainians in the cities of Severodonetsk and Lysychansk. That's according to Ukrainian officials. They say Russian forces reached the last highway out of the cities and even set up a checkpoint, but it was later broken. The officials say the Russian army does not control the route now, but they are shelling it. If those two cities fall, Russia would gain control over the Donbas province of Luhansk. Over the past few weeks, Russia has focused its fighting in the industrial eastern Donbas region, where Moscow-backed pro-independence fighters are stationed. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says that Russia is pursuing a policy of genocide in Donbas. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Researchers have found 1 in 8 COVID hospital patients have heart inflammation up to 2 months later. We now present you an article written by Nicola Davis. The piece is titled, Study Finds COVID Can Cause Ongoing Damage to Heart, Lungs and Kidneys. Researchers have revealed damage to the body's organs, including the lungs and kidneys, in common in people who were admitted to hospital with COVID, with 1 in 8 found to have heart inflammation. As the pandemic evolved, it became clear that some people who had COVID were being left with ongoing symptoms, a condition that has been called long COVID. Previous studies have revealed that fewer than a third of patients who have ongoing COVID symptoms after being hospitalized with the disease feel fully recovered a year later, while some experts have warned long COVID could result in a generation affected by disability. Now, researchers tracking the progress of patients who were treated in hospital for COVID say they have found evidence the disease can take a toll on a range of body's organs. What's more, they say the severity of ongoing symptoms appears to be linked to the severity of the COVID infection itself. Professor Colin Berry from the University of Glasgow, which led the CISCO19 or cardiac imaging in SARS coronavirus disease 19 study, said, even fit, healthy individuals can suffer severe COVID-19 illness, and to avoid this, members of the public should take up the offer of vaccination. Professor Colin Berry added, our study provides objective evidence of abnormalities at 1 to 2 months post-COVID, and these findings tie in with persisting symptoms at that time and the likelihood of ongoing health needs 1 year later. Writing in the journal Nature Medicine, the researchers describe how they tracked the outcomes of 159 people hospitalized with COVID between May of 2020 and March of 2021. The research team carried out a range of scans and blood tests at 28 to 60 days after the COVID patients were discharged from hospital, with patients also given questionnaires to complete. The results were compared with those from a control group of 29 people with a similar age, sex, ethnicity, and cardiovascular risk factors who had not had COVID. The authors of the report write that, compared with controls, those who had been hospitalized with COVID showed several abnormalities, including in results from imaging of the heart, lungs, and kidneys. The team found about 13% or 1 in 8 of those hospitalized for COVID were deemed by experts to be very likely to have myocarditis or heart inflammation compared with just one control participant. Dr. Andrew Morrow, also from the University of Glasgow, said this led to a lower heart-related quality of life, greater illness perception, higher levels of anxiety and depression, and lower levels of physical activity. The likelihood of myocarditis was higher among healthcare workers and those with acute kidney injury, as well as those with more severe disease requiring invasive ventilation. Dr. Andrew Morrow said these findings reinforce the importance of both the vaccine program and novel treatments that have greatly reduced the number of severe cases of COVID-19. The results also revealed those who had been hospitalized with COVID were more likely to need outpatient secondary care or be referred for symptoms consistent with long COVID, with death and rehospitalizations also much higher in this group. Dr. Betty Raman, a cardiologist and long COVID expert at the University of Oxford, who was not involved in the study, said the study provided important insights into the prevalence of clinically adjudicated myocarditis and its association with prolonged symptoms in those hospitalized with COVID early in the pandemic. However, Dr. Betty Raman noted that presence of persistent heart inflammation was not assessed during later follow-up. Few participants had received a COVID jab, and the COVID variants involved were unlikely to be the Omicron lineages that are prevalent today. She said, current day estimates of myocarditis following more novel SARS-CoV-2 variants in the post-vaccine era may differ from this study, given the lower risk of hospitalization and severe disease attributable to differences in variants and vaccine effects. Meanwhile, a leading expert has warned long COVID could create a generation affected by disability, with people forced out of their homes and work, and some even driven to suicide. In an exclusive interview with The Guardian, Professor Danny Altman, an immunologist at Imperial College University of London, said that the UK's current approach to COVID fails to take the impact of infection sufficiently seriously, adding that more needs to be done to aid diagnosis and treatment of long COVID. Professor Danny Altman said, "It's kind of an anathema to me that we've kind of thrown in the towel on control of Omicron wave infections and have said it's endemic and we don't care anymore because it's very benign." Professor Altman added, "It just isn't, and there are new people joining the long COVID support groups all the time with their disabilities. It's really not okay, and it's heartbreaking." According to data from the Office for National Statistics, by the end of January this year, about 1.5 million people, or 2.4% of the population in the United Kingdom, said they were experiencing ongoing symptoms more than 4 weeks after their first suspected COVID infection, with 45% reporting that infection was a year or more ago. The findings chime with a recent UK study that found only around 1 in 3 patients who had ongoing COVID symptoms after being hospitalised with the disease reported feeling fully recovered a year later. Asked whether long COVID could lead to a generation affected by disability, Professor Danny Altman agreed. He said, "Yes, totally." But he emphasised that long COVID is not limited to the United Kingdom. Professor Altman said, "This is a global problem. We've got at least 5 million people on the planet with long COVID. That is very much a lower limit estimate. And they've all got a wide array of problems and they are big problems. It's going to drive people out of housing, out of work, and in some cases, it's going to drive them to suicide." An expert on T cells and autoimmunity, Professor Danny Altman has recently teamed up with journalist Jez Meninger, who himself has long COVID, to write the Long COVID Handbook, set to be published later this year. For Professor Altman, the decision to become involved in research into COVID and its ongoing impact was a no-brainer. He said, "We were people who had decades worth of viral immunology and autoimmunity. So, you know, what else have we been training for?" But long COVID is far from simple. One study has suggested the condition is associated with more than 200 symptoms, from brain fog to heart palpitations, while microscopic damage to the lungs, microclots, and low level of certain antibodies are among the mechanisms that experts have suggested could be linked to long COVID.
seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wasalam, is actually known as Bab al-Hawaij.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام خير الأمور أوسطها.
زيارة of Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim عليه السلام.
السلام عليك يا مولاي موسى بن جعفر ورحمة الله.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Musa al-Kazim عليه السلام. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners, and I'm your host, Mahdi. We're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was also the seventh divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam led a life which was in balance and harmony with that of the Prophet Muhammad, his great-great-grandfather. His life and the life of Imam al-Kazim was in the line and the direction of the Prophet Muhammad. And of course, the life of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam was a strict adherence and obedience of Islam in so many different ways, whether it was his ethics, his morals, his behaviors, his actions, his statements. We find that Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was the copy of the Holy Prophet Muhammad of Islam, the messenger of Allah. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam led an upright, righteous, and noble life. These are his dialogues.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام أول ما يبر الرجل ولده أن يسميه باسم حسن فليحسن أحدكم اسم ولده.
Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam stated, the very first act of kindness of a man towards his son is to give him a good name. So keep good names for your children.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. In the beautiful dialogues of the divinely appointed imams, of course, we find many dialogues with family members, with friends, with companions, and with the people in general. But what is really interesting is that there is a certain conversation found in the traditions by the divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Kazim, alayhi salam. But what is interesting is that in this conversation and in this dialogue, Imam al-Kazim, alayhi salam, puts forth some pieces of advice to his son. What a beautiful conversation between a father and a son. And so in this dialogue between Imam al-Kazim and his son, Imam al-Kazim says, O my little son, beware that Allah misses you during an act of obedience that He has commanded you to perform. Dear friends, there are many times where we are supposed to be committing an act of obedience, and yet for some reason we do not commit that act of obedience. For example, there is something that is wajib that we must do. It is obligatory that we do a certain action, but for some reason we end up not doing that wajib, that obligatory action. And so here, Imam al-Kadhim, as he advises his son in this beautiful dialogue between father and son, he says, "Be very careful that Allah does not see you committing an act that you are supposed to be doing." Now, sometimes we think that committing an act or doing an act which is wajib is limited to the salah or the fasting, you know, or hajj or zakat or khums or these things. There are other times, brothers and sisters, where something must be said. For example, supporting an oppressed person, helping somebody who is under oppression, helping somebody who is being bullied, and yet we stay silent when we should have said something. This too is an act of obedience, which we did not do, and Allah witnessed that we did not do. And on the other hand, there are times where we should be silent, but yet we tend to speak out, perhaps because of emotion or anger or jealousy or greed. Again, something that we should have done, we should have had obedience to Allah, and yet we did not. So beware, and be careful, and be wary, for Allah sees both our acts of disobedience, things that we should not do, as Allah sees our acts of obedience, things that we should all do. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Kadhim, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Sodagar.
The aspect of, or I should say, one of the aspects that made the imamah of Imam al-Kadhim, salamullah alayhi, very critical is the conditions that ended up being the conditions of the ummah and the conditions of the movement of the Ahlul Bayt during that period. The movement of the Ahlul Bayt was to change that. The movement of the Ahlul Bayt is to change that. To become the rule of God, no one has the right to govern people in a way that is in the ruler's best interest. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's laws are put in place. God has given us these laws. In ahsantum, ahsantum li anfusikum wa in asa'tum falaha. Those laws are given for our own benefit. If we abide by these laws, we will benefit from it. If we don't, we will be hurt. And this is about any individual that implements those laws. And on a societal level, on a global level, for all people, if people implement those laws, if governments implement divine laws and govern people's lives based on God's instructions, people will benefit. No one has the right to come forth and establish laws that are in the interest of a few, and the masses don't benefit from that, materially as well as spiritually. The rule of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the rule of Islam, the rule of the Ahlul Bayt, the rule of the representatives of the Ahlul Bayt means that.
Listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, Fi Amanillah, and God bless you all. Thank you.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The Biden administration has unnecessarily and often unlawfully jailed tens of thousands of asylum seekers, many of whom have suffered severe physical and psychological abuse and discrimination, according to a report published recently. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Report Details Biden Administration's Cruel and Unnecessary Jailing of Asylum Seekers. Here's more on the issue. The Biden administration has unnecessarily and often unlawfully jailed tens of thousands of asylum seekers, many of whom have suffered severe physical and psychological abuse and discrimination, according to a report published recently. The Human Rights First HRF report entitled, I Am a Prisoner Here, offers a harrowing look inside the world's largest immigration detention system, one which the Biden administration uses to jail people seeking refugee protection. HRF interviewed across scores of asylum seekers and collected information on hundreds of others jailed by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, DHS, many of whom reported sexual, physical, and verbal abuse, punitive use of solitary confinement, denials of basic necessities, and medical neglect, among other mistreatment. Jailing asylum seekers is inhumane, unnecessary, and wasteful, the report notes, adding, moreover, the mass detention of asylum seekers violates U.S. legal obligations under the Refugee Convention and its protocol. In its guidelines on the use of detention, the U.N. Refugee Agency, UNHCR, states that asylum seekers should not be detained and that the use of detention is, in many instances, contrary to the norms and principles of international law. The publication notes that President Joe Biden pledged to eliminate prolonged detention and the use of for-profit immigration detention centers and uphold the legal right to seek asylum. Yet to date, DHS under the Biden administration has detained tens of thousands of asylum seekers, jailing many in newly opened or expanded facilities or in remote areas where they often face insurmountable barriers to fairly presenting their asylum claims. According to the report, asylum seekers detained by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, include torture survivors, political dissidents, student organizers, human rights activists, and survivors of gender-based violence. The paper claims the Biden administration is using flood enforcement priorities that continue the failed approach of past administrations by targeting people requesting protection in the United States and jailing them for prolonged periods instead of allowing them to pursue their cases while living safely with their U.S. families and communities. One refugee fleeing death threats for his political activities told HRF, "I am a prisoner here. I would rather die in my country than be jailed here." Another asylum seeker said, "We came here to a country of law, but I found my brothers in tears. I don't know what to say. I did not expect this." Under the administration's enforcement priorities guidance, DHS has separated families seeking refugee at the border, illegally subjected children to detention in adult facilities, endangered many asylum seekers, and placed people with serious medical conditions at heightened risk during the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. The report notes that in October 2021, a Venezuelan asylum seeker died of complications from AIDS and COVID-19 after 5 months in detention. HRF also found racial disparities in the length of asylum seekers' detention. Overall, migrants tracked by HRF were jailed for an average of 3.7 months. People from the majority black countries, however, spent an average of 27% longer behind bars. The report details racist abuse by jailers, including taunts about whipping detainees and their families like slaves and lynching them. While welcoming the administration's plan to end the deportation of migrants under Title 42, a public health provision first invoked by then-President Donald Trump under pretext of the COVID-19 pandemic, the report warns that DHS continued use of the flood enforcement priorities to jail asylum seekers as more are finally able to access U.S. asylum processes threatens to further entrench and expand the mass detention of people seeking refugee protection. Rebecca Gendelman, Associate Attorney for Refugee Protection Research at HRF and author of the report, said, "As the Biden administration ends the illegal Title 42 expulsion policy, it should not perpetuate the cruel and unnecessary use of detention against people seeking refuge in this country. The government has legal authority to parole asylum seekers and other immigrants. Its choice to detain them instead endangers lives, separates families, inflicts trauma, wastes resources, and punishes people for exercising their legal right to request asylum." The report concludes that the Biden administration must alter course, stop jailing asylum seekers and treating them as enforcement priorities, use its legal authority to release them, and dismantle the unfixable U.S. immigration detention system that violates human rights law. In doing so, the administration should shift to proven case support programs run by community-based organizations and not so-called alternatives to detention that rely on punitive and intrusive electronic surveillance or effectively place asylum seekers under house arrest.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a beautiful hadith and narration, which has been narrated from Imam Ridha alayhi salam in the famous book Fiqh al-Ridha. This hadith and tradition is about not letting trade and business and work divert you from the ritual prayer, the salat. There's a general verse in the Holy Quran which kind of alludes to this matter. God Almighty says the following: men whom neither trading nor bargaining distracts from the remembrance of Allah, and the maintenance of prayer, and the giving of salat, and the giving of zakat, the giving of the alms. They are fearful of a day wherein the heart and the sight will be transformed. Right? So this is a verse that alludes to the fact that business, transactions, work in general shouldn't divert us from the worship of Allah, which is manifested in the form of the ritual prayer, the salat, and the zakat, the giving of alms, and in general, the remembrance of God. In line with this blessed verse of the Holy Quran, we read the following tradition in this book, Fiqh al-Ridha, narrated from Imam Ridha alayhi salam. The Imam alayhi salam says, "When you are engaged in your trade and prayer time arrives, let not your trading divert you from it." Right? They'll say that it's time for salat, it's time for the ritual prayer, and you're at work, you should take time to go and make the prayer. Of course, a lot of people who live in the West, for them, sometimes they can't pray at the time of the prayer, at the time of the virtuous time of the prayer, the beginning of it. Their supervisors only allow them to do so on their break. But if there is the opportunity to do so and pray on time, then somebody should definitely try to do so on time. In continuation, the Imam alayhi salam says, "For Allah described a certain people and praised them, saying, men whom neither trade nor sale can divert. These people used to trade, but when prayer time arrived, they would leave their trade and stand for their prayer. They deserved more reward than non-traders who prayed." Right? So people, this is interesting. In the end of the tradition, the Imam compares these two groups of people. One group of people who are businessmen, who are at work, and who take time off of work and their trade to go and pray on time. And then other people who pray on time, but they don't have anything to do. They're not at work. They're unemployed or they're off from work, but they pray on time. Right? The Imam says that the first group, the people who prayed on time, even though they were at work and they're busy at their work, are better than people who prayed on time but were not at work. The reward of the first group is definitely more than the reward of the second group. Right? Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtue of taking time off from work to pray on time and not allowing work to divert us from praying on time and from praying. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?